Hey there, and welcome back to Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden, where the rules are made up and the points don't matter. I'm Daniel McFadden, a general assignment reporter at the Arkansas Democratic Gazette, and we are again going to be talking about the most recent weekend of NASCAR racing at Martinsville Speedway, which saw the NASCAR Cup Series race won by Kyle Larson.
Here at 3 and 4.
What a comeback. Kyle Larson continues the Hendrick dominance at Martinsville.
I don't even know what to say.
Join me again this time around to discuss all things NASCAR is my co-host, Jared Haas. What's up, Jared?
Nothing much. I think Kyle Larson is the only driver that said hot diggity dog after leaving Martinsville, because there's a lot of people not happy.
Yeah, I think that the number 5 team is probably, well, no, there's some other teams that are happy, like, you know, the Stenhouses of the world and the
Corey Heim.
Yes, yeah, he did win over the weekend. But no, we're here to talk about the Cup Series, and Kyle Larson won. What did you think of this race, Jared? There was, like you said, a lot of people aren't happy. Some fans aren't happy. They thought that was a bad race. It was a fine race. It was a completely acceptable Martinsville race.
I give it a B minus. It was definitely better than last year, but still, with the short track package, it's still not translated into the racing that people come to short tracks for. I think that's the big thing, is those fans will come. They want to come for short track racing, and it just seems, it doesn't seem that's there. It still feels like a road course type of racing, and it was definitely an improvement from last year. There were no green flag passes for the lead.
Last year.
Yeah. But this year there was at least 3, one with Kevin Harvick, one with Denny Hamlin, and then one for the eventual race win with Kyle Larson.
Yep, that came at lap 371.
Yes,
when Kyle Larson got past Joey Logano. This race came down to 2 things. A caution for J.J. Haley hitting the turn 3 wall really pretty hard.
The 2009 F1 champion.
Yes, the 2009 F1 champion. We will always have that. if we remember anything from this weekend, 10 years from now, it should be that J.J. Haley was the
That's legally a joke. That was a Fox graphic mistake.
Yeah, but no, that was funny. But no, the last caution of the race came on lap 344 for J.J. Haley getting into the wall. And then the final 46 laps were under green. And things were made interesting by pit strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You had Kyle Larson, who only had 2 tires. You had Joey Logano, who stunk up the race for the most part. He didn't take any tires. I think the other guys who only took 2 or didn't take anything were Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Bubba Wallace, and a couple others.
And let's remind people, Joey Logano got the free pass under the first caution of the day after the end of stage 1. He went a lap down, and he was in the lead late, and then obviously strategy messed him up. But we'll go run down through the top 10 finishing order. We had Kyle Larson at first, Joey Logano second, Martin Truex Jr. in third, Joe Gibbs Racing teammate Denny Hamlin in fourth, pair of Stewart Haas Racing cars are next, Chase Briscoe fifth, Eric Almirola in sixth, Ryan Blaney seventh, good run for Ricky Stenhouse Jr. in eighth, Bubba Wallace with a quiet ninth, and rounding out the top 10
Did you know that this guy came back? He was back.
Yeah, Chase Elliott. Yes, that 10th is Chase Elliott from his injury, and he made a pretty good run. I think he was mired in the back half of the top 20, and he climbed his way to a top 10 finish.
He was passing a bunch of cars there at the end to get him his first, give him a top 10 in his first race since Auto Club, right?
Correct.
So he's back. But yeah, Denny Hamlin, he finished 4th. That's his first top 5 of the year. Ryan Blaney, that's his 4th top 10.
Yeah, like I said, the surprise is when I looked at this, I didn't realize Bubba Wallace finished 9th. He didn't really have a loud day. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. again, both of those drivers benefit from the strategy call that was made. And you would say well-timed caution for them, some not so others, with Anthony and Alfredo losing a right rear tire.
This was the thing that got NASCAR Twitter up in arms on Sunday. Everyone was just ticked off that the NASCAR didn't throw the caution sooner for a wheel that was like nestled up against the wall, which I don't think anybody up in the tower could see it.
You know, that brings me back. Remember the good old saga when people were yelling at TV a few weeks ago, like Phoenix specifically, of not catching, you know, cautions and spins on the track.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give props to Fox Network for catching the tire on track. And I remember even watching like an old race in 2001 at Las Vegas. There was debris on the back straightaway. Fox, the TV coverage, caught it. And then two laps later, NASCAR had to throw the caution because of that debris. So, I mean, it's that pick and choose battle. You want them to be, Fox knows it, NASCAR knows it well, but it's an ever balance, but it's not a good look for NASCAR. And I don't think that flagman could have saw that tire really well. And
they did have a shot of the flagman that I think was deceiving.
Like, yeah.
He's to the left of the wall. He was not hanging over on the track with a direct line of sight of the tire. So I can get why they missed it. But Elton Sawyer, NASCAR official, went on SiriusXM NASCAR radio today and said that they should have put out the caution sooner. But no, that caution, the way it came out, and pretty much on the tail end of green flag pit stops, allowed guys like Logano and Bubba Wallace and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. to leapfrog back up into the top 10. So with Kyle Larson's win, after leading the last 46 laps, because he wasn't going to be a factor really in this race at all until the final, you know, batch of cautions allowed him to get up there. But he's now the second multi-race winner this season. We did not get our eighth different winner like we discussed last week.
Shucky darn.
Yeah. Oh well. So both multi-race winners this season are Hendrick drivers, with Larson and William Byron. Hendrick has won 4 of 9 races. This win by Larson was the first win for the number 5 at Martinsville since 1984, which is when Hendrick Motorsports got its first win with Jeffrey Bodine, which was, they made a point of emphasizing this week.
That was almost 39 years ago.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty interesting. I would have probably, Terry Labonte kind of had some runs, and I don't think he won at Martinsville when he was with the Hendrick era, so that probably makes sense.
Yeah. It is a known fact that for the first half of Kyle Larson's career at Martinsville, he was not good. And he kept, you know, emphasizing
2 mile
that.
Kyle.
2 mile Kyle, yeah.
He performed well at Michigan and the almost unfortunate Auto Club Speedway, almost no more. But
yeah,
that was his bread and butter. And now with Hendrick Motorsports, he's shown the diversity of how he can perform at short tracks, road course, those 2 mile tracks. And I mean, he's already proved being a NASCAR champion in 2021. 2022 was a little bit of a hiccup with at the Roval. He could have easily been a champion that well this year too. So we're definitely in the prime of Kyle Larson, and he's definitely showing it with Hendrick Motorsports, able to win at tracks like this when he's previously struggled.
Yeah, in his first 10 starts at Martinsville, Larson only had 3 lead lap finishes and 4 DNFs. He has finished on the lead lap every single Martinsville start since 2019. So that shows you his improvement. Larson called this like a top 7 win of his career due to the struggles he's had and the work he's had to put in to getting to this point where he could win a race at Martinsville. So here's audio of what Kyle Larson had to say about this win after Sunday's race.
Mark Garrow, PRN. Kyle, you come off a 10-win season to 3-win season last year. You've won 2 races early this year. Does it start to give a feel like another maybe potential double-digit win season, winning 2 races early and knowing that, you know, the team is improving all the time?
I mean, I don't know about double digits. Like, that's pretty tough to do, and it's only happened a handful of times throughout the last, you know, couple decades, I guess. But I've told a lot of people around me, you know, when I go to dirt races and stuff, because they don't follow it a whole lot, you know, competitors and stuff, like, oh, how's your stuff this year? And I tell every one of them, like, man, I think we're honestly close to as good or just as good as we were in 2021. So I think in the races that we've finished and executed well, I think it's shown. You know, we've been up front in every race. We've challenged for wins. We've shown that we've had winning speed at every single race. COTA maybe arguably is our only race this year where we haven't been, you know, a contender on speed, at least for the win. But you know, we were a top 5 car that day, I thought. So I've had a few DNFs, but outside of that, you know, we've been in the top two, I think. So, or top five, four, I guess, with Phoenix. We had a shot to win there and fell back to fourth. But anyways, I do feel like we are close to what we were a couple years ago. And we're winning at tracks I suck at, so that says a lot.
We'll go to Seth and then Kelly.
Seth Egger, kickingtires.net. Kyle, you mentioned the struggles that you've had here. Considering that, where does this win compare with other victories that you've had?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you can accomplish something that you don't see possible, when you do accomplish it, it moves up the ladder pretty high. So this is an extremely special win for me. I've worked very hard to get better here. I feel like every time there's a test available, I get put on that list to test here because I struggle, and we want to get better. So I've got tons of laps around here and not many top tens. Honestly, probably more races where I've finished a lap down than on the lead lap. So it's been difficult. And then, like I said, when you can win at a place like this, it is definitely up there. You know, I was teared up the whole last lap. I heard Cliff was teared up too. So that feels really, really special because, you know, he's so strong and like emotionally strong. And to hear that, you know, means a lot. You know, this win here today means a lot for everybody.
Someone asked in the audio, they asked Larson, you know, you got two wins now. Do you feel like you can get to double digits? And he's like, hold up. No, way too early for that, which I agree. Way too early to talk about 10 wins or multiple wins like that at this point. Do you agree?
I feel like I asked Ross, ironically, last year, did he feel like a championship contender, you know, forming those wins. He was like, it's too early to judge, which I agree, but you know, the prospects are still there that it could be very likely that Larson can reel off double digit wins. Like I said, he's already multiple wins this season, so he's only got 8 more to go to 10, and there's a lot more than 8 races to go. So very likely, understandably, it's curious to see how much does he see this season parallel to his 2021 season.
Well, he said in the press conference, like he's told people, like, outside of racing, you know, as his other dirt racing, you know, stuff that he does, people will ask him, how are you guys doing? He says, well, I think we're really close to 2021. Yeah. If that is the case.
Oh gosh. That should put red flags for the competition and be like, hold up. Kyle Larson's going to be pretty close to what he was in 2021. you almost want to pencil in and championship four right now.
So, the standout performance of Sunday was arguably Stewart Haas Racing. First off, with Ryan Preece starting from his first career pole and leading the first 135 laps before Sunday. Preece had led 25 laps in his first 123 Cup starts. Also compare that to Cole Custer. Cole Custer led 29 laps in his entire Cup career up to this point. But not just Preece, he had Eric Almirola running up there in the top 10. You know, that's where he finished. Also, Chase Briscoe. Oh. This looked like Kevin Harvick's race to win for a while. And then you had those cautions come out at the end. We were talking before we started recording. This was probably Stewart Haas's best overall performance as an organization in a very, very long time. But it is just one race.
Yeah.
So what did you think of what they were able to do today before timing of cautions and stuff like that?
They did their homework coming in. Like I said, they had all four cars. You had, obviously, Preece on the pole leading all those laps. You had Eric Almirola, Chase Briscoe, and then you had Kevin Harvick all starting in the top 10. Mm-hmm. And this track is track position, track position, track position. I mean, you saw with Ryan Preece was running away the field. And then he got back in traffic, couldn't really come back to that since.
Yeah, had a speeding penalty.
Speeding penalty, and had to settle with the 15th place finish. And more of the heartbreak is Kevin Harvick. Kevin Harvick was the first to come off of pit road on that final caution, but he had a flat tire mm-hmm. when I believe his lug nut was off. Fortunately, yeah. The wheel didn't fall off.
Yeah.
And kind of, like I said, ruined Harvick's day. And that would have been a pretty good run for the money between Harvick and Larson. Logano just didn't have the car to do it. But yeah, I mean, you got to say there was just bad luck for two of the Stewart Haas Racing cars, and two of them delivered from their good qualifying runs to a great finish at this weekend, at that weekend at Martinsville.
So looking at this race as a whole, this, like we said, it was better than last year. We had multiple passes for the lead on the track under green, which we didn't have any in this race last year. Like I said, I liked it. Some of the drivers didn't, specifically Denny Hamlin, who he said the package was terrible. He said it's either the package or the tires. You can't pass cars that I was lapping 10 laps before. We caught a caution. I couldn't pass them for a second. It's very difficult. Next gen racing is all about strategy, execution on pit road. That's who wins. Rarely does the car that dominates or best car win simply because you can't control the race when you need to. At least we couldn't. We made a great strategy call at the end to get positions back. Chase Briscoe, who finished fifth, said, I thought it was 5 to 10% better than last year, even though there's still a really long way to go. I did think in the driver's seat you made a little bit more of a difference. The problem is when you can downshift and things like that, these cars have so much forward drive and obviously not a lot of power coming off the corner, so everybody is kind of the same speed. Jeff Andrews, who's the general manager and president of Hendrick Motorsports, was asked by my ex-NBC Sports colleague Dustin Long about the prospects of getting more horsepower in these cars and when that could happen. And he basically said, if you want to do that, if you want to make the changes that would give these cars horsepower, you have to do it now because they're ordering parts basically for next year already. So here's the full audio of Jeff Andrews' comment.
Yes, Dustin, I think, multi-answers to that question. First, yeah, it's always achievable. It takes quite a bit of work to get back there. You know, we are, I would say, 5 to 6 months out on, you know, parts orders and deliveries. And really, when you get to this part of the season, you start to consume a lot of sealed engines that you run earlier in the season. So it gets complicated just to try to change, you know, a package over, a change of power level over, because these engines are built and tuned and all the analysis and everything that's run on them is for the current power level. So when you start to make changes to that, it requires changes to a lot of parts and pieces, and some of those would be as much as, you know, a year to possibly 18 months lead time to get that work done and get parts ordered. So it's a complicated question. I personally do not disagree with you that you know, more power would, you know, be something that to take a look at someday. It's a long-term decision for the engine companies to do that.
And so to follow up, so it sounds like even if people wanted to do it for 2024, it's almost too late at this point.
That decision needs to be made now. Yeah, very, very soon. Because parts, depending on the parts and pieces, you know, some things, as I said, are you know, easily 6 months to a year out from a planning perspective. And one thing that, you know, you need to realize is that all these engine companies have ordered parts and pieces for really the remainder of 2023. And to start to change that architecture around, it gets very, very complicated very quickly. And that's a long-term decision for sure.
All right, so Jared, do you think there needs to be more horsepower in these next-gen cars? Is that the solution, or is it tire wear off? What's the fix that you would make?
I would like to make first mention of be careful what you ask for with NASCAR. I felt like that was like the dream of they wanted 43 cars to cross the start-finish line side-by-side-by-side, being all equal in that. And when it is equal, it's a lot harder to pass because what difference it is between the first car to the 35th car. I think there definitely needs to be horsepower back and, you know, having that drive off, bringing a lot more of those ponies off the corner is going to help. And I think the tire situation is too. It needs to be, I do agree, it needs to be done now because, like I said, the next gen process has been a slower process of them getting transferred over. But yeah, this does need to be something. How Clint Bowyer shared those sentiments on social media. He said this racing product sucks as well too, kind of responding to what Denny Hamlin says. So no, I agree, and the big reason why they kind of brought horsepower down, I believe, was to bring in more manufacturers. And that hasn't been the case for NASCAR in the past.
Yeah.
Like I said, Toyota was the most recent manufacturer that came into the sport, and that was in 2007.
Yeah.
So
Dodge left 4 or 5 years after that?
Yeah, in 2012 after Keselowski won the championship.
Yeah.
So for their reasoning why they're going with these 550 to 6, you know, these lower horsepower packages.
We're at 670 670.
Yeah.
For short tracks.
For short tracks. I was thinking in the past, too. So those lower horsepowers hasn't brought in those new manufacturers. So why not give to the drivers what they want? So I'm in full agreement with that. Bring the horsepower back. A lot of drivers have been, I mean, whether it's, like I said, Harvick or Parker Kligerman, they want horsepower in these cars.
And one reason they have this, what do you want to call it, you know, lower horsepower is for to save money.
Yeah.
That's basically it for teams or the manufacturers to save money. That's like the main goal.
I want teams to push it to the edge. I remember like people saying way back in the day, you know, I brought this best engine to Daytona. It's probably going to last 500 miles and maybe a lap more. That's it. And that, we kind of lost that touch of people pushing it to the limits with their product. I mean, you obviously want to be faster, but at the end of the day, you know, if you try to go push the limits too far, you might blow your engine. And I think that obviously creates a dynamic, you know, storyline in that. So I don't want to be like, hey, NASCAR, make parts that fail. You know, it brings back to the teams like, hey, push it to the limits as much as you can. If you want to push it over and, you know, say your engine kaputs, you know, 7 laps to go, that's your fault. But it, like I said, with this next-gen car, puts them in that box, and, you know, it's kind of hard with that when everything's equal and you can't really have that edge.
And my thing is, when you try to cut costs, you usually wind up getting a worse product, right?
Yeah.
And so much about NASCAR today is cutting costs, saving money, and I just feel like if you do raise the horsepower, and that does lead to a better product, that leads to more interest, which leads to more eyeballs, more people showing up for the race, more people watching on TV. What does that lead to?
Money. Yeah. More people in the stands, more merchandise purchased. I mean, that's why, like I said, F1's starting to bring that momentum back, and I think NASCAR should take a look at that.
It, like, I know a lot gets made about people saying that my street car has more horsepower than these cup cars, which I don't really care about that. I don't care about how much horsepower it has compared to a street car. Whatever.
Honestly, why not just have under your street car?
Yeah, but if the consensus is among drivers that they need to raise the horsepower to improve the product at short tracks, which is supposed to be the foundation of your sport, which we're all clamoring for more short tracks, maybe do it.
Yeah, we got an event that we've been hyping up the past few weeks. North Wilkesboro.
Yeah.
That's going to be a curious case of how this track's going to be racing. Are we going to get a Texas-style type of all-star race? Are we going to get a interesting all-star race with the H surface there?
Well, the thing about North Wilkesboro is, for that race to be a success, nothing bad needs to happen.
Just yeah.
that they could go the entire race without any passing. It could be a single line.
And you want a parade at that. You don't want any passing.
But it could be that. And the point of the All-Star race is just to highlight North Wilkesboro.
Yeah.
It's not really to put on a great race. You want a great race. And I think with the rules format they have for the race,
I'm a race promoter, I would say, hey, I have North Wilkesboro and I have great racing here. I'm not going to just say, I'm situated in North Wilkesboro.
Yeah.
Come to my racetrack. There's a little bit more that needs to happen between that and, you know, track promoter type of style stuff. But like I said, that Martinsville racing's just been, it's questionable hot dog, if you ask me.
I don't like their hot dogs. I don't like Martinsville hot dogs.
I haven't had it, so.
They're cheap and thin and red. And that's the Martinsville hot dog. There's nothing memorable about the taste or anything. So
it's just like a fried bologna sandwich.
Yeah, basically. But no, like the racing at Martinsville, that should be a point of emphasis for the sport, especially when that race is the race before the championship. It's the final cutoff. But like the racing at Richmond was really good, I thought. Phoenix was okay. It just seems like Martinsville is the one that gets heightened because it's Martinsville. All right, before we move on to the news segment, Jared, what's been frying your egg this week?
Oh, boy. I had to text you Saturday morning that my egg was already fried. This NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series race was run, I don't want to say a farce, but I mean, that was not a well-executed race by NASCAR.
Explain what happened.
So, what happened is there was weather during the race weekend at Martinsville. And implemented this season with the rule changes was rain tires, you know, mud flaps. There was a race rain package so that drivers can race in wet conditions, not a monsoon, not, you know, not torrential downpour, you know, light rain. With the current NASCAR situation, the regular package, they just have slick tires. That's just, you're going to give a slip sliding away, you know, like a water slide out there. So they have this package, and teams have to buy tires. And, the, you know, between 36 teams, it's about $2,400 for a set of tires, and they had two sets of rain tires. I mean, that's $170,000 plus of all the teams buying rain tires. And the purses are usually like three-fourths of $1 million. So, I mean, that's a good chunk of money going to rain tires. They started the race, 25 laps. They dried it. They had light. So let me go back here. Had a lightning delay when it started. Okay, you can't race during lightning. Big downpour after lightning let go. Okay, we can't race in a torrential downpour. But they started drying the track, and they started on rain tires, but they almost got the track almost too dry. They got it damp. It was almost damp weather tires. And those tires wore pretty well, and the drivers were excited, but it was just this wafting back and forth. They brought down the cars down pit road twice for red flag for rain, and the later rain showers weren't that heavy. I mean, it was like light sprinkles would have been enough to cause trouble with slick tires, but it was different from where we were at Daytona as well for the Truck Series race. Truck Series race at Daytona and Martinsville both had more laps run under caution than under green. So, understandably, the difference is Daytona, being a super speedway, doesn't have rain package. We understood that. Kind of frustrating to go down pit road three times, but that was the ordeal. You can't control the weather. NASCAR put an implement system that they try to control the weather to produce a race that night, and they just kind of dropped the ball on that and had to call the race early because of rain.
Yeah, I was not a fan of NASCAR pursuing this experiment with racing on a damp or wet surface on ovals, the short track ovals. Not a fan of it.
No.
It seems too risky.
We've already seen a Coda in 2021 where they had it in a downpour and drivers couldn't see.
That was a monsoon.
Yeah.
So
you can't race during that, but the storms later in the night weren't that too wet where you're going to lose. You can't race out there, but still you have rain tires. They poorly executed what was going on that weekend.
All right. So moving on to news. All right. So for the first time this year, the Cup Series TV ratings went up for a race. The ratings for Sunday's race saw an average of 2.218 million people. But that was up from 1.99 million for the same race last year. But that race was conducted on a Saturday night. There was a rain delay. And so that's a marginal uptick from last year. And this was the race which had Chase Elliott back in it.
Yeah.
So I guess next week will be the week where you can – maybe
that's why Chase Elliott's coming back at Talladega.
yeah, he's gonna come back again.
He's gonna come back again at Talladega.
Yeah, the next weekend at Talladega will probably be a real measuring.
That'd be more apples to apples. This was
of the Chase Elliott effect.
Yeah,
because if 0.3 million people tuned in,
300,000 people. Yeah,
for just for Chase Elliott, I doubt that.
And from what I've heard, We had one of our front stretch reporters talking to Chase Elliott fans, and they all said, we were still watching the races even when Chase Elliott was out of the driver's seat, because, I mean, that's still the 9 team. And so it wasn't – I don't think it's that big of a Chase Elliott bump that we saw.
Like, one of the races that he was out, the rating was, like, down a million from –
Richmond?
The previous year, yeah. And it's like, that's definitely not Chase Elliott.
No,
there's not a million people not watching just because Chase Elliott's.
I know Chase Elliott's the most popular driver in the world, but
no, he's the most popular driver in the Southeast region of the United States of America,
which is where most of the votes come from. But I mean, that's a hard barometer to say, you know, Chase Elliott. Not just Chase Elliott's going to save NASCAR's ratings. It's got to be NASCAR themselves that's going to save that rating slide.
Yeah, so moving on. So, yesterday a story was published by the Sports Business Journal, looking at how NASCAR tracks are trying to take advantage of their property to boost revenue and stuff like that. And one item of note in this story was about what's going to be done with Auto Club Speedway. As we all know, its last 2-mile race was held, you know, last month. Or 2 months ago now,
yeah.
I guess. And so we've been waiting for the official word about what's going to happen with that track, if we're going to actually get a short track at all. So in this story, it says that NASCAR Chief Operating Officer Steve O'Donnell said he envisions future NASCAR schedules continuing to have a mix of races at permanent venues and innovative events on street courses or temporary ovals. NASCAR has not yet revealed details of what the temporary short track in Fontana would look like, or when it would debut, but O'Donnell said NASCAR would be using new technologies to construct at least partially temporary venue. That was news to me, that the thing we might get to replace Auto Club Speedway will be a temporary track, like what we get at the LA Coliseum.
That's the confusing part about this. NASCAR was like, we need to do this West Coast swing. We need to make sure we're serving our Southern California fans down here by having a race at Fontana. We'll make it a short track, make it interesting. Oh, wait, now we're going to make it temporary? It's not a good look for the situation.
Partially temporary.
Yeah, partially.
What does that mean? Like,
it's just going to be like the front straightaway is going to be there, and then, like, you know, the back half is just going to be residential, and then we're just going to close off the houses for the next race. But, I mean, you can't have a points-paying race at the Coliseum.
No, you can't.
And I feel like that's going to be their solution if this temporary track is not available for a race weekend at NASCAR.
Will like, the racing surface be permanent, but the grandstands are temporary? Like,
what was it? The Sagas, I think, was a track that was I think that actually just got torn down recently. That was, like, a fruit stand. So I think they're trying to think of more like it was like a stand, you know, farmer's market type of stuff. But I think they're trying to think of more for the, you know, state of California and the city of something that's more multi-purpose, because it's hard to have stuff besides a racing at a racetrack.
A multi-purpose, like, all right, here's our race configuration. Here's our concert configuration.
Yeah.
Here's our car show
configuration. And I'm not saying it's not impossible to have stuff like that. I mean, Bristol had a football game before.
Yeah.
I know Texas Motor Speedway's hosted, like, other events in the infield before. But, you know, it's hard with a 2-mile track or, like, a really short track. That what is supposed to be, it was Fontana, it's supposed to be, like, a really longer Martins, you know, the elongated, like, Martinsville. I mean, it's tough to have something that temporary, but try to have it permanent on that. Unless you were going to go to, like, a street course type of race out there.
It would be interesting if every time we went back to this partially temporary venue, it was, like, a different configuration.
We're going to go down this block, and then next year we're going to go down this block, and then next year we're going to go down this block.
One year it's a half-mile short track. The next year it's 0.65. It has banking, and it's, like...
And then the year after that, we'll just go on the freeway. Free for all.
Mario Kart, baby.
Yeah. So.
All right. So our final news item, Jared, the long national nightmare is over. I am, of course, referring to the end of the saga that was the illegal Lavoz at Phoenix Raceway. We're recording this on Tuesday, April 18th. And just before we started recording, it was announced that the final appeal of Colleague Racing's penalty from its own illegal lavoirs had finally come to pass. And while the final appeals official ruled that they did commit the penalty of modifying their lavoirs, they had their penalty modified to match what Hendrick Motorsports received from their appeal. And they have had all of their points restored, but they still lose their crew chief for four races, and there's a $100,000 fine. So it's over. Can we not talk about lavoirs, penalties, appeals for a very, very long time?
Hopefully until the next person gets caught with the illegal parts. I think, wasn't NASCAR, they said they wanted that penalty to match the Hendrick penalty.
Yeah.
Which I don't blame them. Which, I mean, if you got that appealed and, I mean, they got penalized 75 points, but Hendrick Motorsports doesn't. That wasn't a good look. So at least NASCAR has a sense of like, hey, they committed the same, you know, part infraction. Let's just keep the penalties the same. So I'll give them props for that, at least looking out for that consistency.
The best thing that came out of this whole penalty ordeal was some much needed reforms to the appeals process. Now the appeals panels can issue a statement explaining their decision, which we got with this the announcement by the final appeals official, who was Bill Mullis. I believe he's a track manager. But yeah, he gave a lengthy statement about the process, what he considered and stuff like that. So that's nice. We have a little bit more transparency.
Yes.
Which should have happened years ago.
Yeah.
Since, you know, these things aren't like streamed or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But no, that was much needed. I'm glad that this, through this whole ordeal, that happened.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think I'm glad we got a little bit more transparency, because at the end of the day, we want to make, you know, that's a big thing with NASCAR, and saying, hey, this is what goes on behind the scenes. I think that's going to help them overall to gain that trust back in the public that was kind of broken from what happened in the past few weeks. So props for them.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just, yeah. Like I said, I don't want to hear about any appeals of penalties, no more penalties, just for a long time, moratorium, no penalties. All right. So moving on now to the final segment of the show, the preview of this weekend's NASCAR Cup race at Talladega Super Speedway. All right, Jared, we're going from NASCAR's smallest oval track to its biggest, half-mile Martinsville to the 2.66-mile Talladega Super Speedway, and you're going to be there this weekend for frontstretch.com.
Correct. I will be down on the ground making the drive there Thursday afternoon.
Oh, you're driving.
Yes. Well, if there was a direct flight, I would have took it, but the connecting flights between that and the fiasco that I had trying to get back from Austin was not fun, so I was like, let's just drive it. It's 6 hours. That ain't that much. So, yes, I will be boots on the ground there getting coverage for frontstretch.com.
In this podcast.
Like I said, you'll probably hear some interviews that I got from there. And I actually have a microphone this time, a nice microphone. So we at least should have some good audio with that as well.
But, oh, yeah, Talladega Super Speedway. It's the third race of the season on a Super Speedway configuration track. of the three, Talladega, Daytona, and Atlanta, Talladega is my preferred one.
Yeah.
It's a more forgiving track.
It's wider.
It's wider, forgiving.
Yeah.
You're more likely to get a dramatic last lap attempt.
Remember where the start finish line's at.
Remember, yes, yes.
It's not at the trial, but it's past it.
Yes, yes. As Mike Joy likes to point out.
Every announcer's pointed that out.
Yeah. But no, like, for those, if you're new to NASCAR, yes, unlike Daytona or every other oval track.
Except for Phoenix.
Except for Phoenix. Yeah, the finish line is not in the exact middle of the front straightaway, right there in front of all the grandstands. It's just farther down out of the trioval in the short chute going into turn one.
And the reason why they did that is to sell more seats down there. Great marketing idea. I like this guy.
But no, more forgiving track, more exciting racing. I'm hoping it's better than the Daytona 500. Though, the Daytona 500, it was a calm race up until lap 119.
Yeah.
And then the wheels started coming off.
That was a weird Daytona 500, whereas that first half was so quiet. It's going to be interesting to see how this kind of folds. I think it would be a little bit more dramatic, but I still feel like there's going to be the same themes that we see at these other super speedway races prop up here at Talladega.
So, yeah, at Daytona, there were 4 multi-car wrecks of 7 cars or more. The most was 13. That was a wreck fest that ended under caution with Ricky Stenhouse Jr. getting the win. But now we go to Talladega, where Chase Elliott won in the fall. He won after a 2-lap shootout that saw him winning over Ryan Blaney.
And Ross Chastain and won Ross the spring race.
Yes, he did, for win number 2 of his career. And Ross was up towards the front in the fall. For my pick for this race, I kind of just want to, like, keep picking Ryan Blaney until he wins.
I'm just going to put a dartboard up here and just throw at it. I feel like that's super speedway. You know, you might have a better pick luck throwing a dart than trying to pick it, but...
Not really. Okay, it is a misconception that anybody can win at a...
Somebody can win. Eric Jones about won at Talladega in the spring.
Yeah.
But you're going Ryan Blaney. I'm thinking the same camp in the Ford camps. The Blue Ovals have worked well at Daytona and Atlanta this year. I'm going to go with someone that... Third time's probably going to be the charm for him. Was up front at Daytona, got shuffled out late and wrecked. Then in Atlanta, this person finished second behind Joey Logano. I'm going to go with Brad Keselowski. I'm going to have someone that's going to be a little bit sleeper pick.
That's who I meant to say. If I should just keep picking Brad Keselowski because I when it comes to the residual plate races, I have lately just been picking him. Like it's going to be his time. It's going to be his time.
Yeah. Well, Ryan Blaney is not a bad pick. He's won there multiple times before. He won in 2019 and in 2020. So not a bad pick either, but I think it's the Blue Ovals are going to try to control it again. They're a little bit I feel like they work together a little bit better as manufacturers compared to Chevys. But, I mean, Chevys had the numbers. So I still say Fords are going to be an odds-on favorite to win here at Talladega.
Yeah. Ryan Blaney, he just needs a win right now. He hasn't won a race, a points race.
He needs a cookie and a win.
Since 2021, a cookie and a win. cookie and a win. Okay. All right. But yeah, I'll take Blaney. You take Keselowski. What's your pick for largest wreck of the day on Sunday? What's your guess?
I think it's going to be one of those. I think the big one is probably going to happen on the last lap. Oh, I think it's going to be one of those. They're coming into the tri-oval. They make a bad move. I think a lot of the cars are going to be there at the end, right there. So, or coming to the right before the green, white, checkered. It's going to be at the end where it's going to be the big one. And I think it's going to be at least 10 cars, probably 13.
I was going to say.
Great minds think alike.
Are you taking 10 or are you taking 13? Which one are you taking?
I'm taking 13. Okay. I said more than 10.
Okay. I'll go 14.
Look at you.
But okay. All right. I'm looking straight at the camera. I'm talking to you, NASCAR Nation. I'm talking to you, drivers. You guys did it in Atlanta. You were able to go the last 40, 30 some odd laps without wrecking. You proved you can do it. Please do it again. Please. Please. I'm begging of you.
And I'm looking at you, NASCAR Nation. Daniel McFadden said there'll be 14 cars wrecked at Talladega, though.
But just make sure it's in the first half. Of the race, all right? The first half. Let's keep it clean at the end. It was beautiful Atlanta, and I want it again.
Where can we catch this race, Daniel?
You can catch this race, the Geico 500, on Sunday at... Yeah, the Geico 500 on Sunday at 2 p.m. Central on Fox.
Awesome.
So that should do it for us this week on Dropping the Hammer. I'm Daniel McFadden. You can find me on Twitter at... Daniel McFadden, or you can email the show at dmcfadden@adgnewsroom.com. Jared, where can they find you?
You can follow me on Twitter at @RealJaredHaas. You'll get those updates from this weekend at Talladega, so make sure to follow.
All right. That'll do it for us. Thank you guys again for listening and for watching. Please like, subscribe, share with your friends, your family members, your dogs, your pets. Spread the word, and we'll see you back here next week. Also, we should be having an interview. Oh, we'll be talking to Alex Bowman next week. So be sure to come tune in to that to hear from the driver of the number 48 Chevrolet for Hendrick Motorsports. So thanks again, and we'll see you here next week.